Reading from Trivakti Sandarbha, Anuchet 320. It's quite a long section. It's page 1086 in Trivakti Sandarbha that some of you have. Amorous desire for the Lord that leads one to consider Him as one's paramour is also not sinful. The gopis themselves have addressed this point in these words. Quote, O beloved, you are the knower of the principles of religion, and you yourself has instructed us that the natural duty of women is to serve their husbands, children, and relatives. So let us fulfill this instruction by performing such service to you, the Supreme Lord, because you are the most beloved, the very self, and the friend of all living beings. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:29-32. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Savakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Siddhati Sapadantikam Adadana Spinam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Yud Bhakti Risham Piyatnai Apayamam Anabit Samandam Kripam Bhuhiya Paraduga Dhugi Sanatana Sampabhumasrayami Pancha Kalpa Turubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Rama Hare Hare. So greetings from Rehoboth Beach. I'm staying at the House of Shastra. Haribo Shastra, I guess you're downstairs listening somehow. I'm in my room up here. Maybe he's downstairs. And I'm here for a week with Naranjan Swami Maharaj and Bhakti Vishwambar Madhava Maharaj, formerly Mahamantra Das Brahmachari. Ayashwar Prabhu is here, Mahahari. Of course, Satsarup Maharaj lives also nearby. And very nice. It also confirms a principle that I've always seen, no matter where people were. If you make your home welcoming for the Vaishnavas, somehow or other, eventually they wind up coming if that's your desire. So many Vaishnavs come here. To Jayadvaita Marge, who's just here. And we do have a nice program every day. Of course, I'm finishing up my Japa book here. It's a nice retreat. But every day, we at least meet for lunch. And either Satsarup Marge comes over here, or myself and the other two sannyasis go over here to his place. And in the evening, as my godbrother Pradyumna would say, we have Shastra Vichar, considering and studying Shastra. We're reading the story of the pure devotional service of Madhavendra Puri, who discovered the...
Jamuna.
Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna. Jamuna.
Oh, Haribo. Hare Krishna.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay. Who is this?
Jamuna. John's Jamuna.
Oh, Jamuna. Haribo. Thank you.
Haribo.
I was just in Princeton for Kirtan, and I missed you there.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. So, we're reading the story of Madhavendra Puri's pure devotional service. He found the Gopal deity, or I would say the Gopal deity found him. I don't think I'm going to tell the whole story there. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 4. It's very beautiful, and we sit and we read and we discuss for 2 hours. And when you're having a good time, time flies. Time is relative in that way. And today we read the installation after he found the deity, the installation of the deity, and Prabhupada was explaining these stories are showing us how we worship the deity. Very, very wonderful. The Anakut ceremony that Madhavendra Puri had that was the same one that Krishna originally had at Govardhan Hill, same place, and we were just relishing listening to these wonderful pastimes, and also really very much appreciating the simple and straightforward and realized purports of Srila Prabhupada, and becoming purified and enlivened in that way. Now this is a Bhakti Sandarbha, and we're into the section of Raganuga Bhakti, when devotional service is performed out of attachment, and one cultivates that attachment. There's two ways to execute devotional service, out of obligation and duty. The goal, what purifies us in spiritual life, is the absorption of the consciousness in Krishna, which draws out our nature, our eternal nature. That's what spiritual life means. That's what self-realization means. The self is a particle, a part, and parcel of God, and meant for God's service, and meant to love God for God's pleasure, which is also our pleasure because we're part of God. That's the ultimate reality, and we described that many times, rasa vai saha. The ultimate reality is this exchange of love eternally, which requires a certain freedom or volition. And spiritual life or self-realization means to uncover that natural state of loving Krishna called Krishna consciousness. Sri Bhakti Rasa Bhavato Mati. The Mati, the mind, the consideration, Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato, the consideration, the thoughts, the mood of Sri Krishna Bhakti Ras, our flavor of devotion with Krishna. That's the eternal nature of the soul, which is covered. It's just like water becomes ice. Its nature of liquidity has been changed. So there's a process of heat that brings out the natural nature of water, the eternal nature of water, which is liquidity. So in the same way, we are loving servants of Krishna, but there's been some transformation in that. And spiritual life means to uncover that original nature. It's just like a drop of water falls from the rain and becomes mixed with mud. And then there's a process of bringing it to its clear, pure state. And that process is, I think if you press 6 on the phone, then it mutes the phone, and we can't, So a drop of water falls from the sky, and then that's like we're part of Krishna. That's our nature. And the clear, pure water has wonderful qualities. It has taste. It has clarity. It's pleasant. So it becomes mixed with something. So we are here in this world. Our nature has been covered, and the process of bhakti is just like the process of bhakti is like the distillation of that water to bring it back to its original nature. And that process is focusing the consciousness on God. And by focusing the consciousness on God, just like a magnet attracts, there's something, if we can do that, we can focus on God, then there's a certain attraction between us and God, just like a attraction between a piece of metal and iron. And by doing that, the natural attraction comes out of our heart. So that's the process of bhakti. That's the process of devotion. And there's two ways to focus the consciousness on God. With an understanding, I should do it. Or with an attraction, I want to do it. And obviously, to focus the mind on God out of natural attraction, I want. Because that becomes the natural characteristic of the mind. It's a much more powerful process. So Bhakti Sandarbhit describes these two processes. One is called Vaidhi Bhakti, where you focus the consciousness under the jurisdiction of certain rules and orders. And there's Raghunuga Bhakti, where it comes natural, where you're focusing out of attachment. And that's what this discussion is. In this section is discussing. And to show this point, and the point that's being made here is that when there is when the attraction comes from the mind rather than just the intelligence, from the understanding, when it comes from the mind, the attraction is and the absorption is much more powerful. To show how powerful that absorption is, Jiva Goswami is not. He's when he's discussing it. The point is that when that absorption, that absorption cannot be generated as powerful through scriptural ordinance as it can when there's a natural. Of reason from the heart to focus on the object of attraction. And he even makes the point, and that's what's going to be discussed here, even if that absorption attraction of Krishna is from an emotion that's unfavorable, it still is still very, very powerful because the principle of absorption will purify the mind. So even if it's out of fear or enmity, that one is focusing on the God, then he makes the point that because there's absorption, those inimical feelings, the impurities in the heart will be purified. So this is such an important principle for us in Krishna consciousness that somehow or other we have to develop this attraction for service. And we see, if it's just obligatory, it's sometimes hard to remain fixed. So in our process, it's recommended to somehow or other to become attracted to Krishna and cultivate that attraction. And nourish that attraction with Krishna. So he's making this point, and to demonstrate this point, we discuss this, he goes to the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, where this point is so demonstrated so powerfully in the story of Shishupal and the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Shishupal, who is spontaneously inimical towards Krishna from his very birth, he has those impressions of an enmity towards Krishna. And when he curses Krishna in the Rajasuya assembly, which Yudhisthira, who is in this Vedic kingship process, the most effective ruler is the noble king, and he is trying to establish his authority, and it culminates in this assembly, and somehow in every assembly, and this is always the process of any function. You have to establish who is senior, and that senior person is worshipped. In this case, the most exalted person, and they establish Krishna, and he becomes envious, and he begins to curse Krishna. Krishna kills him, and his soul merges. And Yudhisthira is watching. This is amazing. The most inimical person, his soul is merging into Krishna's body, and he achieves this Sayuja Mukti. He achieves liberation, which is not even attained by the Gyanis. And Yudhisthira is puzzled, and he we're in the section now where he is asking Narada Muni, how is this possible? And then Narada Muni begins to describe the power of natural attraction to God. And the attraction means natural attraction, natural aversion, but when the absorption in God is coming from the heart or the mind itself. When it comes from the intelligence, then you have to subjugate the mind, because the purification will come from the mind. The intelligence is to control the mind, to focus it on God. This is why it's so important to practice sadhana bhakti, to practice devotional service. This is why, when we understand how the process of spiritual life works, we make commitments, vows, to have a sadhana and chant a particular amount of rounds or have a particular type of practice. Because when the mind becomes focused on God, that's the process of taking away the mud and contamination that's covering the qualities of the nature of the soul, which is to love God. Chaito darpanam marginam babamaha. It cleans the mirror of the heart, is described like a mirror. The consciousness is described by a mirror. And through that mirror, it should be reflected, the soul. But when it's covered by dust, you can't see the reflection of yourself within the heart. So that process is by this focus of the mind. So he wants to show the power of natural attraction. So to answer Yudhisthira's question, the philosophical point, how is that possible? Is because somehow or other out of fear, he was thinking, Krishna, 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 Krishna. And he became purified. I remember when, just to give a little story, I feel somehow that people today need a little story here, but when I had got kidnapped and I escaped from my parents, and I wouldn't talk to them. I was so upset with them, and then somehow I came to New York from Dallas, and somehow my father found out that I was in the temple. I don't know if you guys are downstairs. I kind of hear some noise there, and it's distracting. I don't know if you're. My father somehow one day showed up at the temple, and he told me, he said, after you left for 1 year, all I could think of was Krishna, 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 Krishna. Was out of attachment for his son, who was a devotee. He didn't have favorable impressions of Krishna, but he was thinking Krishna, 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 because of the attachment. And that was a meditation on Krishna, and that purified him. There's a power of that natural attraction. And this is the basic principle that Narada Muni is going to explain to Yudhisthira through this story. And we're up to the point where Narada Muni explains this. Here's, historically, it's not just, he's just explaining Shishupal through enmity, but it's not through, it's through enmity, it's through fear, Kamsa, and it's amorous passion, the gopis, etc. And now we're on this point where Narada Muni is going to explain to Yudhisthira this point of amorous passion. What he does, he gives this verse, he gives historical, it's not just this, examples of so many different emotional attractions to God, that it's purified one and has brought one to a purified stage. So now he's analyzing this, and that's where the section up, this amorous passion. And he describes, and he wants to distinguish it, because this enmity and fear is sinful. It's sinful means selfish. Actually, sinful means selfish. So he wants to distinguish this amorous passion, and he's going to explain it. And Jiva Goswami is going to analyze it, and he's going to analyze it through the Bhagavatam and through these verses. So he says he wants to know if it's sinful in itself. It's sinful when this amorous passion is in terms of you see the queens of Dwarka married to God, or is it sinful when it's amorous, when it's the parakya, the Krishna as a paramour? So first, with this section, he describes, is it sinful by itself? Is it sinful by its very nature? And he says, no, it's not sinful by its very nature. And then he describes the consciousness of the gopis. So this is when you take sannyas, you get the gopi bhava mantra. So the question may be, well, what if you're not in the mood of gopi bhava and you become sannyas? Well, but when you have the gopi bhava mantra, this is the sannyas mantra, which basically says, I won't give the mantra, but I'll give the translation, that in sacrifice, I give myself fully to take shelter of the mood of the gopis. It's the gopi bhava mantra. So the mood of the gopis can either be, a devotee can take that sannyas mantra as a mantra to develop his eternal relationship with Krishna in a specific way in terms of the gopis, or what's the gopi bhava? The gopi bhava, means that ultimate sacrifice of love. They gave up everything for God. This is why it's also the sannyas mantra, because the gopis are the greatest renunciates. They gave up their families, their everything. They gave up for Krishna and went to Krishna in the middle of the night. And their consciousness was simply focused. There was no separation between them and Krishna because their desire was the same as Krishna. So how can it be sinful? It's completely selfless. When your desire is the same as the desire of another, then you are selfless. There's no tint. And that's the gopis. And even if there's some exchange which may have the form of conjugal love in its intensified form, when it's parakya with another, can be the intense form of separate desire, of wanting to enjoy, not wanting to love and give. But there's no separation in that type of love. Their desire is Krishna's desire. So it describes how selfless this love is. So is it by its nature? So first it describes, is it sinful in itself? Is it sinful in itself by its nature? Is it sinful in itself because the act itself is projecting some selfish conception on God in terms of lustful relationships, and it describes how it's, through the Bhagavatam, it describes how it's part of the Sarup Shakti, it's God's own pleasure potency. It has nothing. And then it says the third possibility was the scriptures. And it says there's nothing in the scriptures that says, that declares this as sinful. There's no mention of it anywhere that this type of relationship with God is sinful or selfish. The only verses are of the intense desire to please God. It's a whole different consciousness. And the reason why it's Prabhupada and the Bhagavatam approaches it very cautiously, because although the consciousness is pure bhava or pure love, it has a similar form to, in other words, if we don't understand the bhav of the gopis, the selflessness, if we don't have some experience of that, and then we exclusively meditate on the intimate exchanges between Radha and Krishna, then because the form is similar to the selfish, lustful feelings in the material world, then when we see that, we will project on that act by seeing our own selfish feeling. But if one has some bhav, some understanding, some faith in bhakti, not that one has to be completely pure, but if one has some experience and he surrendered to Guru and some faith in bhakti and some faith in devotion, then when he meditates on those pastimes, even though it has the form that corresponds with lustful or selfish feelings in the world, he'll see that form as the intensity of love, the intensity of selflessness, and therefore the embraces of the gopis, he'll see as the mood, let me give Krishna pleasure by this, by these embraces, these sidelong glances. It's a selfless love. So it's not by itself, it's not by that, it's not by the scriptures. Then the second carry is because it's married, and he gives so many verses. Who can estimate the penance performed by these women regarding the preceptor of the universe as their husband? They massaged his feet, ran all types of stuff out of great love. So it mentioned that. And now we're up to the last category. Well, maybe it's sinful because, is it sinful because it's parakia, it's not married love. And actually, there is a Vaishnav controversy through the years. There are some Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and there's even indication that Jiva Goswami, because this parakya, some people were able to understand, okay, one could be married to God, and that can be spiritual, but they couldn't comprehend how being a paramour of God can be. It was just too much to accommodate from their frame of reference. And therefore, even Jiva Goswami, in some of his writings, there was an indication to satisfy or to not disturb people who were coming to Krishna consciousness who just couldn't accommodate this parakya ras. He made some argument for the swakya ras, the married feelings between. And then at the very end of his book, he said, some verses I wrote, you know, for others, and some verses I wrote for the truth or something. It gave some indication that he may have actually promoted this swakya or this married relationship just because the nature of some dominical people coming to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they couldn't accommodate this. So now Jiva Goswami wants to discuss this amorous desire for the Lord, and that that makes one consider the Supreme Lord as my Parma. That's also not sinful. And here he's discussing this verse of the gopis, and we know this story. The gopis leave, and they come in the middle of night to see Krishna, and Krishna looks at them and said, "Did something happen in Vraja? You have seen everything. It's the full moon. You come on the full moon. Okay, you went to the forest. Now it's the full moon. Now you've seen everything. And chaste ladies serve their husbands. So maybe, okay, maybe out of your love for me, you've came. Okay, that's okay. But better now you serve your husbands and friends. Women who desire good destination should not abandon their husbands. A respectable woman, adultery is condemned. And transcendental love for me is attained by devotional service. So therefore you can now go back. And now the gopis give this verse, and Jiva Goswami is going to show, by quoting this verse in the Bhagavatam, he's going to show how this love is selfless. It's a, because they say, so they respond to, after Krishna speaks to them like this, go home, go home, go home. Oh, beloved, you are the knower of the principles of religion. Okay, and you yourself has instructed us that the natural duty of the woman is to serve the husband, children, and relatives. So let us fulfill this instruction by such service to you. So you're telling us, serve your husband. Okay, and that's religion. Okay, you say serve your husband and serve is actually religion. Okay, we will fulfill this instruction by serving you because you are the most beloved. You are the very self and the friend of all living beings. It basically is saying, is serving the husband, are we serving the husband or serving the soul? No, the soul. And you are the most beloved. You're Priya. You're Atma. When the husband dies, he's burnt. So should we serve the body or the soul? And therefore, this instruction you give us is actually in relationship to you. Because you are the proprietor of everything. So how, you know, it may have a form that we're going with someone else, but actually our eternal relationship is with you. So we actually belong to you. You are the pati. You are the husband. So how can this be sinful? So this is their argument. You're the very self. You are the self. So should we serve, when we serve our husband, is it serving the body or is it serving the self? And you are the self. The self is you. Atma means dear, and you are the most dear. You are the eternal relationship with Krishna. Everyone is secondary. I remember this story. I can tell it many times. I once visited Hridayananda Maharaj in Miami Beach, and he's very, very humorous. He's a genius, actually, and his humor. So he picks me up at the airport. We're riding down Collins Avenue. I told this story before. And Collins Avenue is hotel after hotel, retirement. And all these old, I'd say mostly Jewish people, are just they're sitting on these chairs lining the street in these hotels. So all you see down the main street of Collins Avenue is all these old people lining up one after another. So at that time, that was the Zonal Acharya era, and the Zonal Acharyas were competing sometimes to see who could have the most successful project. And Hridayananda Maharaj looks at me, and he looks at all these old people, and I'm watching them as we're driving the car, and he looks at me, he said, here in Miami, we have the largest changing bodies exhibit in the world. And then, when I come to his house, he was writing the philosophy book, and he said, oh, I'm so excited, I'm writing this philosophy book, and today I just wrote about the MVP. I said, what is this MVP? It's usually, I was a sportsman in my college days, and MVP means most valuable player. So I said, what are you talking about, most valuable player? He said, I'm studying Aristotle, the MVP. I said, what? Aristotle, the MVP? He said, yes, most valuable Pulinda. If you know, Pulinda is Sanskrit for Greek. Anyway, phones are muted, so I can't hear you laughing hysterical to those jokes, so it's very difficult to know if they actually were understood. But the point I went, when I went to him, you know, he said something too. You know, he got a letter from his mother, and he showed me a letter. The mother said, look, I don't mind that you want to be a religious priest and a priest, etc., but why don't you come home and you can live near home and you can be a rabbi? And then I saw Redine on the Marge wrote his mother a very, very careful letter, but he made a point that stuck with me. He said, our eternal relationship is with God and all others are temporary. And this is the point that the gopis are making. You're telling us go home, it's sinful? What can be more pure? Yes, we should be chaste. We should be chaste to the pati. We should be chaste to the husband. But who is the husband? You are the most beloved. You are the self. You are the friend of all living beings. And that's one of the basic principles of Bhagavad Gita also. If the Bhagavad Gita gives different levels of religiosity, Arjuna is asked to kill, and who's on the other side? His grandfather, his relatives, his etc. But the point means in gradations. It's a religious principle. It's Dharma Shastra. You should respect your teacher. You should respect your relatives. But the highest principle is to serve God. And if there ever becomes, it doesn't mean competition between those principles, then the higher and more religious principle is the service of God. So here is this last thing, is amorous desire to consider God as one parama sinful? No, the gopis are saying, what, sinful? We should go home? No. You are the self, and you are the very self. So should we serve the bodies, which will be burnt, or should we serve the soul? And Sukadev confirms the same, and he's going to quote again. This is so nice. Jiva Goswami goes through the Bhagavatam, because as I mentioned in the last class, and it's 20 to 10, so I only have 20 more minutes, so I do want to go further, so we'll read further now. Now, he supports this. He says also, Jiva Goswami says, that Sukadeva Goswami confirmed this same point. And where? Well, after the Rasa dance, because when Sukadeva Goswami was enlightening Maharaj Prickett, there weren't only bhaktas in the audience, but there were gyanis and in person, and so many, and they're hearing about Krishna with the gopis and Sukadeva Goswami. Maharaj Prickett's worried, what are they going to understand? I can understand that this is purely spiritual, but in their frame of reference, what are they going to think when Sukadeva Goswami is explaining the Rasa dance, Krishna dancing in the night with young other people's wives? So, therefore, Sukadeva Maharaj Prickett asked about this for the benefit of others, and Sukadeva Goswami confirms that supreme witness who dwells within the hearts of the gopis, their husbands, and all living beings has appeared in a human-like form just for the sake of play. So he gave the answer that this is not sinful because everything belongs to Krishna. He's not taking others' wives. They are his. And everything belongs to God. So how can it be sinful just to say that Krishna is with someone else's? He actually owns everything. And so he says, because he is the Supreme Person, there is nothing wrong with his activities. Maharaj Prickett explains, the Sukadeva Goswami clarifies this point. He's a powerful person, and he can do anything, and it's just like Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, what? He was able to swallow an ocean of poison. So when you're the Ishvara, you should, from these, you consider that these statements that you should follow God's statements. You can't imitate his behavior, but so even Lord Krishna has pointed out. So now he's going to quote from Krishna himself, but the gopis, now Sukadeva confirms this. Krishna also has pointed out the faultless nature of the gopis' amorous love by using the words spotless union in this verse. And this is that famous verse, Napariyeham. Krishna tells the gopis, after they come and he sends them back, finally his heart melts, seeing their pure, selfless desire to serve him. And Krishna says, my dear gopis, your union with me is completely pure and faultless. Krishna says that. even within the lifespan of Brahma, I cannot repay you who have completely cut asunder the stringent bonds of household life just to serve me. So you will have to be satisfied by accepting the auspiciousness of your own activities as you pay. I cannot pay you. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I said, ye yata mam papadyante, comes the taiva. But as someone surrenders, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I reward them accordingly. But how can I reward your spotless and pure love? What can I do? I am Krishna. I am God. I am loving everyone. I'm loving my parents. I'm loving in Shantaras. I'm loving in Dasyaras. I'm loving all varieties. But your love is just intensely focused on me and no one else. Your love is more powerful than my own. So how can I reciprocate that love? I cannot love you as much as you love me. You will have to be satisfied with the love itself. And that is the highest satisfaction of love. So now he says, the gopis have proven that this love is selfless. Sukadeva Goswami has proven that this love is selfless. And now he quotes Krishna himself. And now he goes further. Good argument. Strong. Like the gopis, others have also attained this type of relationship with the Lord, as pointed out in the Uttara Kanda of the Padma Purana. So in the Uttara Kanda of the Padma Purana, it gives the story of these great sages who were spiritual devotional practitioners. And somehow in the forest of Dandakaranya, they see Lord Ram, and that inspires within them their desire to love Krishna, because Ram is also Krishna. Ram is Krishna in the form of a king. So here he's going to show, if men are wanting to this, men who are pure or wanting this type of love, it shows it's not a material lust, this desire to enjoy like the gopis. If these great sages, they're men. And if they have that bhav by seeing Krishna in the form of Lord Ram, oh, it's so beautiful that we want to serve you in this mood. And that's what a great devotee feels. I know there was one scholar in Vrindavan, and somehow or other, he was a great scholar. He had so many PhDs. So a friend of mine was a disciple of this great scholar. He studied every Nyaya, Purva Mimamsa, the Sanskrit, the Sandarbhas, Bhagavatam. This is the most learned scholar in Vrindavan. So these Western devotees started taking shelter of him. They asked questions. And it was about 100 pages, and it was translated in English. I have the transcript. It's very interesting. So they came to him, and they said, we want Manjari Bhav. Is that okay that we meditate? He saw that they were not really mature. He said, can we meditate on the young gopis? And he said, if you like to think of young ladies, he said, it's Manjari Bhav. He said, it's not young ladies, it's Bhav. It's pure sex. He said, it's not ladies, it's Bhav. From your perspective, if you think that's ladies as it's ladies in the world, the ladies are the form of Bhav. They're the form of selfless love. It has nothing to do with lust. So it's Bhav. And so he says, Padma Purana, previously all the great sages residing in the Dandaka forest saw Lord Ram when he visited their hermitages. This vision awakened in them the desire to enjoy with Lord Krishna, whose form is most enchanting. Attaining female forms, all of them were born in Gokul. Through their amorous desire, they attained Lord Hari and were delivered from the ocean of birth and death. This gave them perfection. This did not bind them. So see how Jiva Goswami is arguing that this amorous love in the mood of a paramour of the Supreme Lord is pure and selfless. Therefore, because this amorous passion of a woman for her paramour appears even in men, and because it is directed towards the Supreme Lord, It is not material passion incited by the material Cupid. Rather, it is completely spiritual because it is aroused only by the Lord, who is worshipped in the Agamas as the transcendental Cupid, who is described by Sukha as the subdued Cupid. So Krishna is the Cupid who bewilders the mind of Cupid himself. So, let me just find where the... So this is not material lust. Otherwise, how could it even attract Cupid? If it was material lust, Cupid is the embodiment of material lust. But this type of love, it bewilders even Cupid. And therefore, Srimati Radharani, who is the embodiment of this love, is called Madan Mohan Mohini, the bewilderer of the bewilderer of Cupid. So if it was material lust, then how can it conquer even the epitome, the height of material lust? Even great devotees like Uddhava have praised this type of amorous desire. I love it. This is scholarship. You want to prove a point? Shastra. What does it say in Shastra? He goes to the Padma Purana. He goes to the Bhagavatam. He sees what Krishna says. What does Maharaj Prakrit say? What does Sukadeva Goswami say? What does the Gopi say? Now he says even Uddhava has praised this type of love. Uddhava is the topmost, the most intelligent person, the topmost devotee outside of Vrindavan. He's a parishad. He's such an intimate of Krishna. So what does Uddhava say? And this is what he says. Amongst all embodied beings on earth, these coward women are supreme because they have exclusive, unparalleled love for Govinda, the soul of all living beings, which is coveted by those who aspire for liberation, by those who are already liberated, and by us, the servants of the Lord. Of then, what value are the three births of a Brahmin to one who has awakened a taste for the stories of the unlimited Lord? So he would rather be a gopi than Brahma, because their bhava, their love is... So he says, I would not even rather than that, this unparalleled love. So, and when he saw that love, if we know the story, Uddhava was such a great devotee, but when he saw that love, when he saw the... So here's Uddhava. He's the greatest devotee. He's a disciple of Brihaspati. He's the greatest scholar. So what happens when he goes and sees this love? He goes to Vrindavan, and Krishna gives him a message to deliver to the gopis. And that message is that I am there in my bhava manifestation, that Krishna is there in love. And when he goes into the forest at Uddhava Ki, if you ever have the fortune to see this place, I remember once we went to this place, it's halfway between Barsana and Nandagram. If you go from Barsana and Nandagram on the right-hand side of the road, and you go into this forest, and actually it was flooded for about 10 years. Only recently again can you see it. And it's a deep forest, and you go into the forest, and it has that mood of the gopi separation. It's very, very intense. And one time I went there, and there was a renowned disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada's godbrother named Janardhan Maharaj. And there was a reputation and understanding of the Gaudiya Math that he was on a very, very high level of internal feelings on Raghunuga Bhakti. He was known and respected, and he was there sitting in the forest at Uddhava Kari meditating and chanting. We met him there. It was very wonderful. And when Uddhava went there, he was such a great scholar, and he saw the gopis. That's that famous where Uddhava looks, and he sees Radharani at this highest stage of Mahabhav, Modanayaka Mahabhav, it means at the height of love, that even when Krishna is not there, the gopis see Krishna. Or even when Krishna is there, the gopis sometimes don't see him. The love, the emotion. So he sees this bumblebee. He sees the bumblebee. That's the Brahmar Gita. He sees the bumblebee. And Radharani sees this bumblebee, this black bumblebee, and says to that bumblebee, and this was one of my, if you hear my sanghas, you probably heard it 4 or 5 times. This was my favorite painting in Krishna book, my favorite statement in all of the Krishna book, where Krishna tells to Radharani, where Radharani tells to the bumblebee, you are the unreliable servant of an unreliable master. And Uddhava is watching the intensity of this emotion, this love, that they're in a state of divyonmad, the divine madness, and Uddhava is humbled, and then Uddhava prays that their love is so, he's so humble that he just wants to be a particle of dust in Vrindavan so that he can get the lotus feet of the gopis. So their love is worshipped by Uddhava to the highest degree because it's so selfless and pure. He does not want Brahma. He doesn't want any other love. He wants this love because it is the most selfless. Jiva Goswami argues further. What further proof is required? It is well known that even the Vedas personified acquired the mood of amorous love for Krishna as a paramour. So the Vedas are what? Veda means knowledge, the personification of the Vedas. They acquire this love because it is described in the Brihat Vamana Purana that the Shrutis, the Vedas, coveting the bhav of the Nitya Siddha gopis, attained gopi forms and were ultimately included within their group. So the Shrutis themselves hint at this celebrated fact in these words. So I have about one more page, so you please bear with me. I know I don't usually like to read so much, but let's just go to the end. So he says, by thinking of you, your enemies too have realized the same truth that the sages contemplate within their hearts after controlling their breath, mind, and senses and rigidly practicing yoga. The cowherd men whose women whose minds are drawn to your sleek serpentine arms, and we too, who share the same internal disposition of the gopis and are firmly fixed upon your lotus feet, are equal in your eyes. Let me say, anyway, the clear meaning of this verse is as follows. The absolute reality known as Brahman, which the sages worship with tremendous effort guided by scriptural vision, was attained even by the enemies of the Lord simply through remembrance without any exertion of worship. So they say that God, Brahman, was attained with the sages' worship, and out of the sages' worship, Atma, Va, Adi, Drastavya, Shrotavya, Mantavya, Nityasadavya. So this is how the sages meditate. They observe, they hear about, they think, they meditate, they hear, they deliberate, they meditate, they realize. This is classic Gyanic process. You hear from the Shastras, and when you hear, then you deliberate. What does this mean? Then when you understand what it means, then you meditate on it. Then when you meditate on it, you apply it, and when you apply it enough, you realize it. This is how... why we should be hearing Shastra every day. If we hear Shastra every day, there will be philosophical points and understand, oh, what does this mean? We'll deliberate on it, and when we deliberate on it, we'll think about it a little bit deeply, and then we'll apply it and realize it. So that process of the great sages to realize the absolute truth, the Shrutis, the Vedas are saying, that absolute truth which is attained by this deep process of Dhyan and meditation was attained by the enemies of the Lord simply through remembrance without any exertion of worship. And similarly, the cowherd women, the gopis, who have beautiful eyebrows, attain the nectar of lotus feet of Krishna simply because their minds were drawn to the sleek serpentine arms of the son of Nanda Maharaj. So, in other words, and similarly, that same thing that's attained by this meditation on the Vedas and this deliberation and this hearing and this analysis, the same thing was attained, the same goal of the Vedas was obtained by the gopis who attained the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet simply because their minds were spontaneously attracted to the amorous form of Krishna. In other words, they tasted the sweetness of love aroused by contact with his feet. The word samadrishi, having the same vision, means the Shrutis were endowed with the same bhava as the gopis. So they attained this. The Shrutis attained it. So the Vedas attained this. And it means they also attained the gopi form, and therefore they also obtained this. The word yayu, they, the enemies attained, is in the third person plural. However, the first person plural, anyway, this is too technical. Anyway, therefore it is appropriately concluded that only enmity and fear are to be given up amongst the different attitudes of absorption. So this was the verse at the very beginning. It says by fear, by affection, by enmity, etc. So he wants to show that actually, although it's mentioned, it's attained in this way, we shouldn't aspire for this enmity or fear. There's going to be another reason why later, but this enmity and fear, because it's sinful. And sinful means it's selfish. You have some desire that you want to fulfill, some revenge or some hate or some enmity. And therefore, he goes and explains how, when it says amorous, because the verse said, which are sinful, he says, no, this sinful doesn't refer also to amorous. This amorous feeling is the highest affection in bhava. And therefore, when we read in the Krishna book, and we read in the 10th canto, and read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, with some faith and some understanding, I often think of Bhuri Jambabhu, who said, yes, I want to read and hear about the gopis' love for Krishna. But Prabhupada said we start from the first canto. So he began from the first canto, maybe about 10 years ago. He began from the first canto 10 years ago, and he carefully taught the Bhagavatam until he went through all 10 cantos. Because what happens when you go through the 10 cantos, the reason why we can't hear something purely is because we have attachment, which we project on what we hear, or we have a lack of understanding. We have misconception. If you don't have the proper understanding and the proper purity, you'll either see, in one way or another, the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis. If you don't have the proper understanding, you may see them as mythological. If you don't have the purity of heart, you may see them as mundane or like your own attachments. But if you hear from Prabhupada in the proper way, and you practice Krishna consciousness, and you get some faith, and you hear it under the guidance of Prabhupada, how Prabhupada presented these things in the Krishna book, then you will begin to see the bhav, or the devotion, or the love. And you will become very, very attracted to it as devotees. Not as in any other impure way. You'll become attracted as devotees. Look at this love. And this is the love I want. Because this selflessness and this purity of heart is the nature of the soul. It's the selfless position of a loving, living entity. And then at that time, one will aspire to hear about these pastimes. He may not have his eternal relationship with Krishna, but he'll aspire to hear about these pastimes, and he'll begin to hear about them. And he'll take shelter of the literature of the six Goswamis. Rupa, how does it go? Vishaya Charya Kavi Shudeha Beman Kabe Hami Evabo Sri Vrindavanam Rupa Raghunatha Padi What is that? Hoibeya Kuti. Wait. Got to chant the whole. Goranga Bodhite Habe Kulaka Sarira Hari Hari Bodhite Nai Ane Babe Nira Ara Kabe Nitai Chande Karuna Hoibe Samsara Basana Mora Kabe Tuche Habe Vishaya Charya Kabe Shuddha Habe Man Kabe Hamahe Rabo Sri Vrindavanam Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoi Beya Kuti Kabe Hama Buje Bose Yugala Pariti. You'll develop a great eagerness, Hoi Beya Kuti, to hear the books of Rupa Raghunath. Because the literature of Rupa Raghunath present extensively these feelings and these moods. One person asked me, I'm attracted to this picture of Radha and Krishna, but I feel like an outsider. What is my role in that relationship? Well, that's described extensively in the literature of the six Goswamis. And also Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they describe it extensively. The sentiments of those devotees, the activities of those devotees, the service of those devotees, the forms of those devotees, the activities, everything is described. And then one approaching it in the proper way, hearing in the proper way, develops this attraction. And he begins to hear and cultivate those pastimes. His return relation with Krishna may not have been awoken, but he has some ruchier taste. And then by that process of following in the footsteps of the Acharya and purifying our heart and serving the mission and developing that attraction, then gradually what happens is that love begins to reflect in one's heart, and then one develops a strong desire, seva sadaka rupena, siddha rupena chaturi, that one wants to serve as this particular devotee is serving Krishna. And that becomes the inspiration for his spiritual life. And that's Raghunuga Bhakti. And then one begins to hear about those devotees and how they serve. And that becomes the inspiration for his devotion. And it's a very powerful absorption because it's coming directly from the mind or the heart. So, therefore, Jiva Goswami wants to remove this impediment that one may think, is this mundane? Is this sinful? No. This is the purest form of love. And we should develop an attraction for it. We should cultivate it, and we should qualify ourselves for it in the proper way. But we understand how high and exalted it is, so we keep this very, very sacred and high. And we worship it above our heads in a very humble way. Okay, I'll end for today. Would anybody like to ask any questions? Would someone like to say Hare Krishna? If someone doesn't think, say Hare Krishna, I'll think that maybe... Harbo, who's that?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who's that?
Gordon in Poughkeepsie.
Gordon, Harbo.
Harbo.
Hey, thank you for coming to our festival there and participating. Thanks, Gordon. Harbo.
Harbo.
Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Paramananda.
Paramananda, thank you for coming on this Sangha and listening.
It's my pleasure, Maharaj. I'm glad that you're doing it. Thank you.
Okay.
Well.
If anybody, I don't know. Someone suggested that I move it till 8 o'clock. and it'd be more convenient to me. The reason I have it at 9 o'clock is because cell phone is free at 9 o'clock. But someone told me that most people now have national unlimited calling. So if anyone wants to give me feedback that it would be inconvenient for them if I moved it early. I won't do that for a while, but after I finish this and go to the CC, I'm thinking of perhaps moving it to 8 o'clock, but if someone would give me feedback and say, well, look, no, then I can't go on because then, you know, we'll have to pay the cost of the cell phone. So let me know. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Who's that? Nanda Dulal, Haribo, Jai. It was so nice being at your house Sunday.
Thank you.
And we ate here those delicious sweet paratas. Tell Sabitri that they were wonderful. Okay? No, I did not forget. Thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, it's Jamuna. I just want to say thank you.
Jamuna, thank you. How is Prahlad?
He's sleeping. 9 o'clock works for me because I know he'll be asleep, so.
Great, okay, thank you. Thank you for coming on. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Take care. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. Very good.
I will.
Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? One more person? Okay, anyway, we'll end for today. Thank you all for coming on. Hare Krishna.